All right. How you doing, man?
Good, man. How the hell are you doing, dude?
Good. Glad to hear you're back in the game.
You know, let me tell you, life, you know, you've gone through some craziness in your life over the last few years. And
God, yes.
It kind of sounds like I just went through the same thing. Yeah, I totally, I was in a marriage for 22 years, and I just, it was a situation that I wasn't happy in. I just was not happy for a very, very long time. And,
right.
You know, I'm getting older. I'm actually going to be 50 in 2 weeks. And,
something, no way, man.
Yeah, something hit me like last year, especially. Like, it was funny. I was actually doing a wrestling podcast. And they asked me a question, like, at this point in life, like, what do you want? And the immediate answer that came to me was happiness. And
right.
it really shook me to the core. Like, I need to make a change in my life, like, now before I truly never experience happiness. And, you know, I ended up telling my ex, like, I think I'm done. And I think it's time I move on, because I know I'm not happy, and I'm pretty sure you're not happy either. And it's not good for anybody, and for my daughters, and she didn't think I was serious. And then it was like, no, I'm serious, and actually I'm moving to Nashville.
That's what that was all about.
You know, it's weird, like, I actually I have a new love in my life, and it's crazy, like, the person I'm with now, like, We connected actually through my show years ago, and her and her sister used to do a show on my network. And, like, the first time we talked, it was a situation like, there's something here, and it was really weird. And, you know, we were friends together for many years and talked about, you know, things in life, and helped each other through entertainment stuff here and there. And then I won the contest to come to Nashville last summer for the Rockin' Pod radio convention, and came here, met her, and we were like, yeah, this is totally real. And here I am, like, we're together now, and I've never experienced love or happiness the way I have in my life. And it's amazing. It really is. Like, now I know what love and happiness is all about. So it's out there, people. You just got to find it.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, dude, I'm glad to hear that, man. I mean, it's always like a double-edged sword, right? Like, I was on the receiving end of that, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But for me, I was never like, everything we went through, right, was not because of that, like heartbreak, right? It was because, like, oh God, what is the collateral damage of all of this more than anything else? You know what I mean? So, and I feel like most people, like, I don't know. I just felt like I had a really one of those, like, Lifetime movie type situations.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just like nonstop. I feel like most people, like, eventually just give in and go, okay, we're just going to agree to disagree. Right. But it's like, so I hope things are great for you, man. But for me, it was like, I never really see it like one way or the other. Like, it was never like heartache. It was the obstacles after that were created for me that were like the difficult part of the journey, so to speak. You know what I mean? I knew the relationship was snake bit pretty early on, so it was like everything else after that. You know what I mean?
You know, that's totally what it was too. Like for me, it wasn't heartbreak. Like, but for my ex, it was. And it was. I mean, it was very nasty. And, you know, the whole divorce situation was really, really ugly. And I couldn't even afford a lawyer or nothing. And like if I, that's why I like really went pretty much radio silent, not just with radio, but with social media. Like, because if I would just post something stupid on social media, like I had my,
oh yeah, dude, you were, this is the Salem witch trials, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I would get text messages
from my ex, or if I didn't get text messages from my ex, I was getting emails from her lawyer the next morning. I'm like, this is insane. Like,
wow.
She actually, she's in a relationship now, and, you know, I said to her from the get-go, I'm like, look, you know, I want you to go find happiness the way I have. You deserve that. Like, you're not going to get it with me, and I can admit that. Like, you need to find happiness in your life, and neither of us are getting any younger. Like, it's time to move on. And from what I've heard, like, she found somebody, and I'm nothing but happy for her, and I wish them the best. And, you know, it was time for me to put my life to get back together on an entertainment basis, and here I am. So
that's awesome, man. Dude, good to hear, brother. Good to hear.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So the thing I got to ask you though is, like, you know, we got this whole pandemic thing going on, this whole quarantine. Like, how you holding up, man?
You know, the strangeness of it all is that I feel like I'm actually flourishing in this situation.
I'm
at least, right? At least socially. I don't like people anyway, so it works out great. No. It's been good, man. I know it sounds funny, but like, it's weird. Like, when the quarantine stuff first hit, my son and I were coming back from my hometown. We went for spring break so that he could like meet some family that he's, you know, have never met. Like, he's like 6 years old now. And I was like, dude, we need to like, I mean, it's a journey across Texas. It's like a good 10 hours. So I was like, you know what? He's old enough now. Like, let's just do it. And have some fun with it. And I didn't really know a lot of what was going on. Right. I know that sounds weird, but we were just seeing so much family, dude. I was in a place that I had not been in years, like, sensing that, like, I was like pretending, if anything, like, whoa, this is maybe what it would have been like if I had stayed in my hometown and been
right.
a father in my hometown, right? So I was just like playing pretend in that regard, right? That nothing had happened to me or that I'd been involved with anything, because I don't want to be like a victim, right? Up until that point, right? Like, the life that I had known never really happened. It was some crazy dream, right?
Right.
So I was pretending, and I didn't have time to like be on my phone and scrolling through Twitter and news and Instagram. So it was really like, for a week, dude, like, all this stuff was happening and I had zero idea. Like, we weren't watching the news because, I mean, we were in a hotel. So the last thing we're going to pop on when we get in after having some good times all day is like, hey son, you want to turn on the news?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So we were like completely, I had made it my goal for that time that I was just like, I'm one time I can shut out the world. I'm shutting out the world. And
nice.
Like, here we go. You know, my business, you know, we have the studio and stuff. It was on spring break too. So I was like, you know what? There's going to be nothing, famous last words, earth shattering, that'll happen. Right. What could happen from me not paying attention to what's going on? So when we started making our way back, I started driving and I had like my phone, you know, plugged into the car, and I'm getting messages from like, you know, our clients from the studio and stuff. Are we still on for, you know, this week? I'm like, why would we not be? Like, I don't understand what's going on. Like, I really didn't. And where we were, there was like none of this. Because we're closer to Mexico. So there was like no craziness, no worry. No one was freaking out about anything. There was no cases of anything.
Wow.
So it really was like we were in another world. And it was as I got closer to Dallas and closer to Dallas, I was like, what is happening, man? And it was like some crazy bad dream.
Yeah.
Because we weren't even really like, my son and I were totally unprepared. I mean, I ran through groceries, you know, that we had, because it's like, hey, we're going to be out of town for a week. So let's just, you know, go through whatever we have. So I hadn't gone like grocery shopping. I didn't have a lot of stuff. I was like, what the heck is going on? I had zero time to think as a business owner. So I didn't have a chance to pivot. We just kind of went like 24 hours by 24 hours until we could
right.
finally like lock into something, man. But it's been crazy, you know, and being a musician, it's trippy because it's like, I mean, I think by nature, a lot of us are, you know, both ends of the spectrum, right? We're either like totally extroverted, got to be out all the time, like party people, or like me, I'm like Brian Wilson, Beach Boys, like hermit, you know what I mean? Like, you got to drag me out of the house, dude. But at the same time, it's something about like being told that you can't do it anymore. All of a sudden you're like, now I want to, you know, and my little boy, he always, you know, I keep close with his friends and like their families. And I always set up, you know, play dates and stuff for him, and we hang out and stuff, like the parents and I, or he's got his soccer and his baseball and life stuff he does. So being, you know, at home with a 6-year-old, like, who's full of energy, it's been pretty crazy for us, because we literally will have like, you know, NXT WWE matches, like, in the living room, just to get that energy out. You know what I mean? We're like, yeah. But it's been interesting, man. On the creative side, I got to say, as a producer, and making the pivot, I somehow figured it out, and I've actually been able to get like 4 releases completed for other artists, like just in this time. So it's amazing, like how much time I waste commuting to downtown Dallas in that regard, that I was like, wow, I'm homeschooling a kindergartner. I am running a business and I finished 4 releases. I'm like, huh, ain't that something? You know what I mean?
That's awesome. That's awesome.
It was really strange, but it's scary. You know what I mean? It's scary because it's the fear of like the unknown, right? And now I search for news. So then this type of situation brings out the crazies, right? Because now you're like reading these articles from people that are like, they're going to extend it because Texas moves pretty fast, I think, on this. So we've been in it since like March. So we're coming up close to like 2 months at this point. But it was like, yeah, they're going to say April 13th and then May 13th and then June 13th, right? You like start hearing all these crazy conspiracies, and this is their chance to implement martial law and one world economies. And you know what I mean? And you're like, what? I'm like, dude, I got to put my phone down before I freak out, because you'll see something on the news, you know, like,
yeah.
And then people cross the two, right? Like, oh my God, Governor Abbott in Texas has declared the disaster until May 13th. We're stuck in until May 20th or something. And you're like, no, man, like the safer at home is actually completely different from a disaster declaration. One is resources. One is asking people to stay home, and they can't even really tell us to stay home, right? They're just highly suggesting it. And
yeah.
Then you get all the people fighting. A shelter in place actually means you have to shelter where you are. So if I was at Home Depot, I should technically be staying in Home Depot until otherwise notified, right?
Exactly.
So I should be living at aisle 8 at Home Depot. But it's wacky, man, because it sometimes I'll go down the rabbit hole and like watch all this stuff, and I'm like, my creative side is like, huh, I wonder if there isn't something like really here. Do you know what I mean? And what's really eerie is Never Broken, like the new single that we're going to release in May, is essentially like my anthem for overcoming adversity in your life and not letting the obstacles in your life break you down, right? Like, never be broken is my thing. I'm like, you can only be like a victim for so long, right? At some point, we've got to take that responsibility ourselves and like, don't let things break us down in life. And as I'm listening to the final mixes of the song, and I'm like, you know, seeing the stuff on the news, I'm like, how weird that like, this all kind of ties together like almost too perfectly. You know what I mean? So my creative brain is like, whoa, like, did I sense like that? Or is it the other side of my creativity, which when the first Estranged of Angel Stiff was coming out, like Miracle and Mirror Mirror, I was experiencing one thing, but now I'm experiencing a different side because I've lived life and started to enjoy and see things. And now I'm kind of like full of the piss and vinegar. You know what I mean? Like, now I'm just angry. So it's interesting, man, like for real.
Actually, you can kind of like, and thank you for sending me the single before anybody else gets to hear it. I'm loving it.
Damn it, did you dig it?
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah, like it's funny because like the first little couple notes, I'm like, all right, it's gonna be kind of like in the Mirror Mirror vein, Miracle vein, and then it just kicks. I'm like, uh oh. He is angry.
Yeah, well, that's that part of that I tell you, that, you know, I'm like, okay, you can only be taking hits for so long. Like, eventually you got to hit back. It's now it's kind of on you is the side, you know, that I'm coming from at this point. You know what I mean? Like, you can't be blaming life for things anymore. Now you've got to, like, start kicking back, right? And so the way that riff kicks in, for me, metaphorically, is, like, that's me kicking back. You know, like, boom. So it was fun to do, man. And it was just crazy. But it's just crazy how it's all kind of lined up with everything that's happening right now.
So with the song Broken, I mean, also, too, like, you worked with Christofferson and Jimmy Beadle. And I noticed Jimmy Beadle, he's worked with people like Any Given Sin and Saul, that's had, like, a ton of success with SiriusXM Octane. Now, is that kind of like the hope, too, is kind of, like, get them to get this song? And was that like the reason going heavier too? Like, maybe get some of that airplay on Octane?
Absolutely, man. You know, what's weird is that, Jimmy Dawson and I, we actually go years back together, like when they were in a band called Seasons After, and my previous band toured with them, man, multiple times, that kind of Revolver tour. We did some other tours together. We had been homies forever, and Dawson and Jimmy and I, we really clicked. I don't know what it was. We didn't necessarily like hang out on tour all the time, right? There was just like Dawson was super businessman and crazy technically creative, and Jimmy's like artsy creative, and I kind of try to do my best at both of those. You know what I mean? No way do I think that I'm super good at them. But that, you know how like you just kind of know certain, you feel a connection to certain people?
Sure.
So it was like all the three of us, we were always kind of like, oh, when we saw each other, you wanted to like, hey, bro, what's up? And like hang out. And we'd text party. Like Jimmy and I were always talking riffs and pedals and tones. And Dawson and I were always like doing the business for our bands. So we were connecting in that regard. And I'd always wanted to work with Dawson because I was a huge fan of the Seasons After stuff. I mean, I was like crazy for that band. I thought they were just so damn good. And I was like, man, I want to like do something like this. So I know these guys, I'm friends with them. What better way to then just like go directly to them? You know what I mean? And I didn't want to be like their band. I just meant I loved the production. I loved the way Chris put stuff together. I knew him now from being on tour with him for days on end, how he was on the technical side of production. And I knew Jimmy from the creative side and, you know, just learning how the band worked. And so they've had great success lately, man, with Any Given Sin and Saul. I'm so proud of those dudes. But that actually wasn't the catalyst for it, because we worked on some tracks early on in A Strange as Angels together that we're going to release after Never Broken. But Never Broken was specifically that one. I was like, man, I'm feeling pissy again. Like I'm feeling those heavy riffs, and if I'm going to do something heavy, I want it to be heavier than anything that I've done before. But at the same time, I want to really maintain that commercial accessibility that I was able to build with A Strange as Angels, because that's something that I've always been a fan of. Like, I don't care what anyone says. Like, I want people to hear my jams. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. I don't create these songs to just, you know, look in the mirror and tell myself, wow, that's a really great song, Norman. Like, I am proud to say that, yeah, man, I would love for people to like, I want fans. And it's not about the money. It's just like, I want people to love it. I want people to listen. I want it to make a difference, right? I'm writing it because in ways that I can't help the world, maybe this is one way that I can. So for me, it's like, dude, I want to share that. So yes, when we were able to crack the Billboard stuff for The Strange as Angels twice over, I was like, man, like maybe I need to go for the brass ring now too, which this day and age is something like Octane. You know what I mean? Because Octane is just massive. And I'm like, man, if we can get some Octane love, that can change the game. And what's really weird too is terrestrial radio has now caught fire again. And I don't know if it's because of everyone. I was talking with my manager the other day, and he's like, yeah, it's kind of weird because people are staying home. People are tuning in for local news, like that type of stuff that you're like, I mean, not, it's not a huge thing, right? But what I mean is that like, it's vibrant again. And there's a lot of people that are distraught in the world, and the angry is coming back to the top. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
right.
I'm like, hey bro, sign me up. You know what I mean? Because I got some angry riffs, but, I still love singing, man. I love my singing. I try to do what I feel is natural. You know what I mean? That's been the one thing that I've just always wanted to do, like musically, is like have some stuff that's just really heavy, that really kicks. But I like being a singer. I want to be a singer. I brought back my screams, which was fun, and that was all Dawson. He texted me one day, and he's like, hey, man, before you come up here to record, can you, like, dust off those screams? And I'm like, what are you talking about, bro? He's like, yeah, man, we're going to go next level with it, too. So I'm like, you know what? Let's do it, man, because I think it would just put the exclamation point on the track, you know. But, yeah, we're definitely trying to get some of that, you know, commercial type love, man. I mean, I think that's what's great. And honestly, like with the way the world kind of is right now, and artists not being able to get on the road, not being able to do their thing, being able to find ways to introduce yourself to a mass audience, this is probably the way. You know what I mean? So we're on that level. It's like, you're just trying to make the pivot. You know, if we can't go out and tour and like get in front of audiences, then I mean, there's only really a handful of other ways that we can still hit, you know, traditional big audiences and those models, and then figure out how to work it from there, you know?
But do you think like a song like Miracle, especially, like I can't explain to you enough how much I truly love that song. Like literally just a week ago before you emailed me, like I'm in my car and I pop that on. I pop you on like on my Spotify every so often. And I was in the mood to hear.
Thank you for that.
Dude. And I put that on and I'm in my car. And I'm just like, I'm blown away. I'm almost like, man, this is such an amazingly beautiful song. I love it so much. And it, like, I sit there and I scratch my head. Even, like, earlier, I'm sitting there and I'm going through the, you know, listening to you on Spotify. I'm getting some questions together and listening to the new song. But I still go back to even Mirror, Mirror. I'm like, how are these songs not freaking huge hits on radio somewhere? You know what I mean?
Right. Hey, man, I'm saying the same thing. No, I'm just kidding. No, what's crazy, man, is that I think I don't know, man. I get into my artist brain again, like super late at night, like sitting outside on the patio. And it's like, I wonder like what's happening right in the world. Is it some sort of like reboot in life? You know what I mean? Because I feel like everything has just gotten so crazy, because I always think about this on a business level, right? You're like, dude, there is just so much out there. How can anyone like get their head out of the pack? You know what I mean? Like in any avenue, not just music, like, dude, there is just so much of everything in the world. Like who is able to like just stick out and rise above a little more than the next person? Right.
Right.
So when all this stuff kind of happened, I was like, I try to avoid, by the way, the words coronavirus and COVID-19, just because I feel like everyone says it now as if they're like extremely educated in it. You know what I mean? You know, and pandemics, I'm just like, it's a crisis. We all know what we're talking about.
Right.
We're all in it. You know what I mean? But so anyways, I wondered, I was like, wow, this is like taking us all back to the basics, like in so many ways. And in some weird way, that's what I meant. I felt like I'm flourishing, and that's, you know, we just got to take it. It's coming back to the people. It's coming back to like who we are as people. It's coming back to the core of life and things, you know what I mean? And it's kind of interesting to see like where it's going to go from here. And I just think, you know, Miracle and Mirror Mirror, they did great. They did better than I thought they would. And there's still, you know, a chance that like we could do some evergreen and bring those songs like back to life, depending on what Never Broken can do. But the fact that we got as far as we did on those was amazing. But I just think there's so much in the world, you know. It's like, how can one artist of any genre really capitalize on anything? Because I didn't think about it like with pop artists, right? You think that everyone knows the big pop artists, but then without something like MTV, that's like a general like go-to, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't pay attention to pop, then you actually don't even really know who that person is, right?
Yeah.
It's just so weird. And that's what I mean. There's so many art resources. There's so many platforms. There's so many artists. There's so many things that you're like, what is a huge success anymore? You know what I mean? Because I know those songs did great things for me. You know, and they opened a ton of doors for Strangest Angels and me musically that anything I had done 10 years before never did for me. You know what I mean? So in a lot of ways, I'm like, well, I think they did have their success, you know, because it's just like, how do you even gauge that success anymore? You know,
did you think though, like going back to this heavier side of you, did you think that at all, like early on when you're putting Strangers Angels together, like you were going to go back to that heavy side?
You know what? When I first started doing the Strangers Angels, my big thing was I wanted to do things differently, because if I was going to ask people to give me their ear for 3 minutes, I wanted to bring something different to the table, for one. Two, I wanted to do something that was going to excite me again, because I'm not saying that I was burnt out, not excited about music. It's just, for me, it's a huge emotional connection.
Sure.
And when my emotions were drained by my personal life, you just kind of had no get up and go anymore at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the only thing that was going to get me excited was trying something completely new and different, you know. And I mean, I wrote some really weird songs. I wrote some weird acoustic stuff and electronic-y stuff and, you know, just all kinds of stuff. I tapped into my faith in some tunes, like in the lyrics. I tapped into, you know, my feelings way more than I ever have, which was new territory for me. But I also was like, man, I love those heavy riffs, but I'm not going to let those come back to the forefront or of a song until I feel like I can do them in a completely different way, because I wanted to like reinvent it. I wanted to do something heavy that you're like, wow, if I compare this to any work he's done before, it still doesn't sound like that stuff. You know what I mean? And yeah. It's not because I'm not proud of what I've done before. I just want to be different. You know what I mean? Like, I really want to be different. I don't want to be like, oh, I'm a solo artist now and everything I do sounds exactly like my other stuff. You know what I mean? I want it to be different. So it just had to impact me, because I felt if it wasn't going to impact me, I can't expect it to like impact anybody else. If it wasn't going to raise my eyebrows when I listened to it and perk my ears up like, whoa, what's that? I can't imagine why I would expect, you know, a listener to do the same, you know?
Sure.
So, I mean, that's why, you know, and more for me, it was more emotive than thinking about heavy. You know, if anything, Mirror Mirror and Miracle taught me to just let the emotions of the song flow and dictate where it should go musically. And the way I used to write would always be like, let's write the music and then try and fit the pieces of the puzzle in there. Because, you know, we had a band at this stage, or the way we put this Strangest Angels together was like, there was no band. So, you know what? Why don't I write what the song is about? And then kind of like a movie, right? Let's figure out what the treatment should be instrumentally. And I think that's what made those songs different. And I think that's what, you know, people when they hear Never Broken will make it different as well, because it was like the lyrics were done first and the intent and the message were put in place first. And then we go, okay, we filmed the scene. Now we got to put the soundtrack to it. You know what I mean? And I think that's what makes those totally different. So even though it's heavy, it's still like, different kind of heavy.
but the thing too, I guess you can also say too, like, you know, one thing you've always said about Estranged Angel, you know, you called it heart rock, and sure, whether it's you know, softer sounding or more commercial sounding or heavy, it's coming from your heart at that time either way.
Absolutely, man. And I mean, everything that we've done like has been, you know, started with an acoustic guitar or a piano, you know, Never Broken included. It was like, it had to start that way because, again, I felt that like the message had to transcend and then you let the music kick it up. And that's that part about the heart rock. You know, it's not necessarily about love. I mean, it's heart rock, and that I'm feeling what's coming from my heart and I want to treat it that way. But once I get into the heavy, what's kind of funny is I always picture it being able to fit unlike old pay-per-views, old wrestling pay-per-views. Like, man, could this song be a theme song for a pay-per-view? Because then, yeah, you know what I mean?
the title broken. And, yeah, I mean, with the title broken and the heaviness, it definitely could be.
Yeah, right? There you go. I always think about that. My inner wrestling nerd always comes out, man.
That's too funny. You know, it's funny with the wrestling thing, you know, which is something we've really connected over. I didn't realize, I just saw you had toured with Fozzy at one point. Did you ever get to hang out with Jericho and talk wrestling?
Yes. And you know what's so weird, man? It's like, so the first time, like the very first show we did with them, he was wrestling at the same time. So the band had like, was there, you know, sound checking and stuff, and we're getting ready to do our thing and like sound check. And it was us, and I think, I want to say Avatar came on, but they came on later in the tour. So, you know, Jericho had just gotten there, you know, straight from the airport, like totally frazzled. It was a smaller town, so he seemed like super frustrated. So I didn't really like, I just kind of like saw him. I think he could tell that I was wanting to talk to him because I kept kind of like going back and forth between the dressing rooms, pretending like I was looking for something.
Right.
But really, I was kind of just trying to find my opening to be like, hey, is so-and-so in here? Oh, dude, Chris Jericho. Cause it's kind of like, bro, it's not like you don't know who he is. You know what I mean? You can't pretend like you don't know whether he's Chris Jericho or like, you know, a musician in the headlining band. You're like, come on, fool. If you're here at 11 in the morning, we kind of all know why we're here, and we all know the players in this game to a certain degree, right?
Right.
So I felt like such a nerd. But the first, he seemed just real frazzled. He was fussing with something. It may have even been like a pay-per-view coming up for like WWE, because he had his like shorter hair at that time. And he was, I think it was the end of that run. And the first thing I thought about was like, I thought he'd be taller. he is pretty tall, but we're like, I mean, we're like the same height. So I was like, maybe I could wrestle then. Maybe I could go out for this. And then we ended up talking maybe after our first or second show with them, because he had actually tweeted that, man, great band, you know, tonight the opening band was killer, like front man, all kinds of energy, Arena Rock Reborn. And I like, I remember screenshotting it like we were driving to the next show, and I was like, no, he didn't know my name. He gave me a shout out. This is so cool. So the next night, you know, I thanked him. I was like, hey man, that was so cool. I geeked out. The coolest thing, 5 seconds of your life, like made a huge difference in my day. Thank you so much. And then we started talking music. We started talking 80s Kiss, you know, and 80s Kiss versus 70s Kiss, and how much he loved 80s Kiss more than 70s Kiss, because that's when he was a teenager, and like just getting into it. And he's such a music lover and such a wrestling lover. And we both just like hit it off, man. And I love his guitar player, Rich Ward.
Yeah.
And Rich knows my brother from other bands. So it was kind of like, I slowly started to get my foot in the door with like talking to him and like being cool. And, but it was really weird. You know, it was definitely at first very kind of like closed off. And then once he opened up, it was like, it was almost like wrestling, like, right? Like he had to stretch me socially. Yeah. And then once I got the stretch, I passed the test, and you're like, all right, you can come into my circle, dude. I just had to make sure you were cool, you know?
That's awesome. Yeah. He's a good dude.
What's that?
He's a good dude. He's a real good dude.
He is, man. He is. And God, I would love to be on his Rock of Jericho podcast.
Dude, he's somebody who, I mean, I haven't talked to him since ECW days. And like back in ECW days, we'd be in the locker room and, you know, I would always have food with me because I would always bring food to ringside. And he was always like, you know, if I had like, I would bring like cereal or boxes of donuts or cookies, he was always the first one with his hand in my box of cereal or something. And we had hit it off really good. And, he actually, it's funny, I didn't even realize, like, somebody had told me after his first book came out that he had mentioned me in the book. I was like, no shit. So I was like, yes. But he's somebody over the years, like, I've been trying to get to interview him for years, and I came close a couple times, but just never came to fruition. So he's like one of the guys on top of my radar, and I'm still trying to get that interview with.
Bro, if you ever get that interview and you need a co-host, call me up.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That would be awesome, man. And then I'll let you guys put me to the table or something. I still practice my bumps, which is crazy. So my little boy and I, we work out in the garage, right? Because he has to do stuff for PE because I'm homeschooling him. So it's funny. He's crazy into wrestling now. So I will actually let him, like, toss me around, like, in the garage. We have, like, a mat. And he'll just, dude, he'll go bump city with me. He's just like, he's pushing me down, knocking me down. I'm like, come on, baby, do it again, do it again, do it again. And I was like, yeah, I don't even know what I'm preparing for, but it just feels right to prepare for it.
you'll appreciate this then. So my girlfriend, she homeschools her daughter, and they're becoming more and more wrestling fans, I've noticed. They're like actually more fans of like classic 80s WWF stuff. So, on Fridays is now like my day to do the homeschooling with her daughter. And the first time we did it a few weeks ago, she wanted a wrestling lesson. So we sat and we watched, she wanted to watch with me, Hogan Andre. So we watched that match, and I was teaching her how to do the moves and stuff and how they did this and how they did that. I said, but now I want you to watch, I made her watch a modern day match so she can see the difference in modern day wrestling. And
right.
we watched Will Ospreay against the Amazing Red, and she was like, you know, nice. You know, around, and she's just like, I don't like it. I don't like it. It's stupid. She's like, I don't like it. I said, all right, well,
nice.
So I put on Flair versus Steamboat, one of their the best 2 out of 3
teams. Dude.
And she just, I'm like, this is where I'm going to teach you now how Flair is the better wrestler than Hogan. and she was having no parts of it. We were in such a heated debate over Flair and Hogan. It was hysterical. She cannot get into Flair. But then I had to like play her some Flair interviews to try to like put Flair over more, but she was not having it. I said, all right, I said, we'll just end the argument. I said, but I just want to play you this one interview because it's a classic interview. And she just kind of looked at me like I was crazy, but it was the classic Dusty Rhodes Hard Times interview.
Oh, yeah, dude. I've dined in Kingswood Kings and lived on pork and beans.
Exactly.
I know that one, dude.
Dusty
Rhodes, the son of a plumber. Dude, and that's what's crazy. I'm with you on that too. And my little boy can appreciate. I can tell he likes the storytelling side more than like the flips and the flops. You know what I mean? Which,
yeah.
Dude, all that stuff is killer. But like, we'll watch everything, and I can tell because he gets into. He'll walk around the house sometimes, literally going woo. And he does stuff like really good. Like he'll do his homework, and he's like woo. I'm like, yeah, baby, get it.
That's awesome.
But we were watching old, like, Lucha Libre matches last night. But it's weird. Like, I can tell by his eyes, right? Like, he's watching the dynamic. And when they do a move, it's like an exclamation point on something.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still, like, he gets into, like, is he going to make the tag? Is he going to get the hot tag? You know what I mean? It was, like, that builds him up more than anything. And I think that's still the difference between, like, the old stuff and, like, the new stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love the new wrestling just because it's awesome. Like, I'm crazy for like Tommaso Ciampa just because I think he just looks like he could murder you. But that comes back from like the old day stuff, right? You know what I mean? It's like you got a legit, like Bill Watts used to say, if you lose in a bar fight, then you don't need to be wrestling because I only want guys that can win in a bar fight. I'm like, yeah, like you know, those dudes were nasty and mean, right? And I love that. And I can tell like how my son gets into that too, you know, like right away when they come out, he can tell who's like a chump. He's like, hey, I don't like that guy. I like this guy. And even if he loses, I don't care. Like he can tell the real deal. You know what I mean?
I can tell you a funny Bill Watts story. So Bill Watts was like my,
hook me up.
My, like the whole UWF and Bill Watts, like I was such a mark for them back in the day. And I ended up over the time, like, yeah, especially like in the 90s, when the whole videotape collecting thing of wrestling was going on. I had collected the whole TV set of all the UWF shows, and I used to mark out for that stuff huge. And I was working at the pizza shop at the time, delivering pizzas, and there was, I'm pretty sure it was like one of the Eddie Gilbert Memorial shows a friend of mine was promoting in Jersey, and he had another friend of mine, Bill Watts, was going to be on the show, so he had a buddy of mine go pick up Bill Watts from the airport down in Baltimore. They used to fly the guys into Baltimore, so it was a lot cheaper than flying them into Philly. So, it was a Friday night, and I'm delivering pizzas at this pizza shop, and I come running in the shop to grab more pizzas, and I look over, and there's Cowboy Bill Watts.
No way!
Eating a freaking cheese stick, and my buddy hijacked him and brought him to the pizza shop to meet me.
That's awesome, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it cool?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He was a little kind of like shocked and surprised, like, cause my buddy he totally hijacked him. Like, he was supposed to bring him right to the hotel. He's like, nah, I'm going to take you here. And he like totally took him like way out of the way to bring him over to me. And it was really cool.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. You know what? I was crazy for UWF too. And we didn't get it where I was from cause we were more like, I mean, we do it hometown of the Guerreros, dude, El Paso, Texas. What? So it was like Guerrero City. A lot of the Lucha Libre and World Class because it's Texas, right?
Yeah.
But I can't remember how I would randomly catch UWF somewhere, man. Like I don't know if it was like a scrambler, like the old cable boxes. I would always press like certain numbers to like get the dirty movies at night, right? When my parents were asleep or something, but I caught UWF or they played it, maybe have been like in place of like AWA on ESPN one night or something, which I doubt. I think because UWF was way gnarlier, but it was just something weird and I caught it. And I remember seeing like Sting in the early days and Ted DiBiase and Dr. Death. And I was like, whoa. And I was like, they've got steel railings and no mats on the floor. I was like, these guys are nuts. And then they started coming to El Paso, I guess when they started to branch out a little bit because they were in Oklahoma. So like, they must have
got something from whatever, I don't know if it was Sinclair Broadcasting still back then, but they started to branch out. So I finally started to see them and they would start coming into the territory or even mixing up with a world class at one point. I think I saw like the Von Erichs against like, you know, Dr. Death and Sting. So yeah, it was weird, man, but I would like lose my mind. And it's when I first heard Jim Ross. So I loved Raw when Jim Ross was on. Because for me, it was like, it reminded me of like UWF in just like a bigger scale. So like there's a certain era with Ross on there that just, dude, it was like, it was my faux, again, like I was talking to you about like pretending earlier. Let's pretend this is UWF and I'm still 10 years old, right? And
right.
So I loved it, man. So I don't know, man. I wish I could have seen more of it growing up, but they did come to my town a couple times with their little green apron.
Nice.
I remember that green UWF apron, dude. And I was like, that's so cool. Because they were like, they're like hardcore before anybody else was, really.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And not even really like trying to be. Bill Watts was just like so gnarly from what I've heard with all his wrestlers, right? He would like find them if they didn't win a bar fight, find them for whining. He would take out the mats. You're like, dude, this is gnarly. He just wanted everyone to be legit, which I appreciated. It was like parts of NWA that were like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when TBS, or had them fire Dusty Rhodes because they really thought he got like jacked up in the eye by the Road Warriors. I remember all that, but I see that's the stuff that I'm saying. Like when I tell my son, I'm like, man, you don't know the stories, bro. Like back in the day, like wrestling was seriously like you had no, like people, they did it right. And there was that blurred line between like reality and like fiction, right?
Sure.
Where you're like, but did it?
I just did I was doing a wrestling podcast interview this past Saturday night, and, you know, they were asking, like, what, like, made me get into wrestling, and I was like, the next I was telling, like, you know, NWA from the 80s with the whole Horseman and Dusty Rhodes and all that stuff, like, that stuff used to get me, like, you know, I'm the Italian guy from Philly, like, that would get me pumped up, like, I just walked out of a Rocky movie, like, that's how I would feel,
right?
Every Saturday, like, watching that. And, you know, I like wanted to be like the quote unquote rock star so bad. And I was trying to play guitar and be in bands and stuff like that. But my backup plan in life was to be a professional wrestler because I was always a fat.
I love that.
So I knew I could never be the rock stars. You don't see the fat rock stars. So when I hit like in 2000, when I hit, or what was it, 1990, when I hit, 20 years old, I was like, all right, well, it's time for the backup plan. And I found a wrestling school and became a pro wrestler. So, you know, it was all from watching those NWA shows, you know, every Saturday afternoon. I was just getting so pumped up. I'm like, this is it.
Dude, so you were more, that's interesting because you were you up in Jersey?
I was right in Philly.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So that's interesting that you wouldn't have been more of a WWF kid, right? Because I feel like NWA was more, like, I got NWA down where we were, at least. And back in the territories, which is so weird to, like, explain to people. They're like, what? Only certain shows were on in certain areas?
Right,
I'm like,
right.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, like, I used to watch the, you know, WWF at the time, and you can just see how it became so cartoony more and more.
Yeah.
And I just went more towards NWA, and then, like, on Fridays and Saturday nights, I would get in on like, you know, a goofy station, like you were saying, like, you know, like the Scrambler, like you might see like porno at night, but you would get in, I would get UWF and World Class, and I would watch those on Friday and Saturday nights, and I was like, holy, this is really what's going on here. These two.
Dude.
Yeah,
dude. UWF was a jam. And funny too, you said that about the rock star. When I was a little boy, I was a chunky little boy, and I remember running into the kitchen. I had seen a White Lion, Little Fighter was the video on MTV. And I loved the song, by the way. But I was like, Mom, I was just hysterical. And she's like, what in the world is going on with you? And I was just crying. I was like, Mom, I just want to be in a band, because I already knew back then, right? And she's like, okay, well, then do it, son. You're like 9. Like, are you so distraught? And I'm like, because I'm too fat to fit into yellow spandex. Because I thought that's what we were going to have to wear forever.
Oh, man.
So,
it's funny, too, because, like, I had friends of mine that I hung with, like, these couple guys, too, and we were all fat musicians. So my one buddy, He was like, dude, he's like, we're going to turn it upside down. He's like, we're going to do a hair band. He's like, and we're going to call ourselves the Fat Bastards in Spandex.
There you go, dude.
And I'm just like, you're out of your fucking mind. There's no way I'm doing this. And then the more I thought about it, I'm like, well, fuck it. Let's do it. What do we got to lose? You know?
There you go, dude.
But it just never happened.
You had your gimmick, dude.
I was like, wow, we got a gimmick. We have an actual gimmick that could work. It's like, especially those guys. Those guys are like real freaking hardcore musicians. And I was just like trying to fake it to make it, you know? And so I was like, yeah, let's do it.
So how was it getting into it? Let me interview you for a second. How was it getting into wrestling? I always wanted to. I wouldn't say that I was too scared. I think music just really took the reins, man. But I did. I wanted to be like a wrestler, and where we were from, like the Guerreros were like minutes from where I grew up. I could have probably walked to the house to their backyard ring. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, I want to train. But yeah, it was actually crazy growing up around them, especially seeing like where it went, you know, was like, I mean, dude, you always knew that Eddie was special, which was crazy. Even as a young man, yeah. Like a little boy, you know what I mean? I was like, something about that guy.
Yeah.
So weird. You know what I mean? Like, there's a couple times in my life I ran into that recording school in Phoenix when I met Chester, when he was going to the same school I was, and he was recording with his old band Great Days, and we became homies. He would invite me. I was like, dude, your voice is so good. And he's like, bro, your voice is good. And we would be like, no, your voice is good, dude. So he would have me come around, and I ended up getting to work with the producers on the record at the time, Jerry Feinbrith and Mike Jones. And then when that band that I was in started touring, we started doing a bunch of shows in NorCal with Papa Roach. And I remember seeing Jacoby, and it was like those three dudes. It's so weird how I felt their like superstardom long before they were even a thing. And I'm not saying like, oh, I can tell what stars are. I remember that, you know, like I'm young, like I don't have experience. Like, I don't know why I'm feeling this feeling about this person. I just know that like, wow. When I saw that dude on stage, I was like, Jacoby is a jam. When I saw, you know, heard Chester's voice, I was like, that dude is going to bring people to tears. When I saw Eddie Guerrero at 17, you know what I mean? You're like, why is he the coolest thing I've ever seen? And he didn't even really do anything spectacular, right? He was just something special about him, right?
Beautiful person. He truly was. Eddie was amazing. He always treated me like in the days with ECW when I was, you know, there with him.
Right.
He was so
around.
Yeah, and then it was crazy. Like 4 or 5 years later, right at the beginning of Ring of Honor, you know, I was at those first few shows, and as a matter of fact, I was promoting shows at that point. And me and Ring of Honor, we were using the same building. We were rotating every couple of weeks. We would use the same building, and so I was there promoting my show at their show, and Eddie came out, and he stopped and he looked at me, and he's looking. And he starts pointing. He's like, wait a minute. And I said, Chubby Dudley. He's like, oh, my God. He came to me a big hug. And he just, you know, we just sat and talked for like 10 minutes. And, you know, the next month, then he went back again. He saw me, same thing. And, yeah, and then he, you know, went off back to Vince. I mean, he's one, like, I see now, like, when I see these, like, Dark Side of the Ring shows and stuff like that. Like,
oh, right.
Like I'm sitting there in tears, like seeing the stuff,
yeah,
and you know, it's just, it's heartbreaking. But like, you got to feel the same. Like, so I didn't know you knew Chester. Like, dude, I know, when I listen to Chester's music now, it brings me to tears. So you're somebody who knew him. How does that make you feel?
It was weird, man. You know what was really weird was actually having people reach out to me when they had heard the news. You know, because they had like known. Like, I mean, he was probably like the first, I guess, maybe supporter of what I was doing without really knowing it, because I mean, he's a few years older than me, but it was like, I was the freshman. He was the senior.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So it was just like, he looked out. It was something about, he just knew that maybe I was going to really be in it, because they would have closed sessions and no one would come in, and like the producers of the record were instructors at the music program. So you didn't really ever want the students fraternizing with the producers, the teachers, so to speak, right? Because it was like, then you would be having favorites in class, right? So you had to like get your intern hours or whatever it was or whatever we were doing at the time. And I don't know why he just felt compelled, but he did. He was like, dude, we're recording tonight at 9 o'clock. Come back. And I'm like, yeah, dude. And then he would have me go to the shows and check out stuff with him and just was supportive, man. And it was so weird to see his rise because we literally saw him like, I mean, just for weeks on end, like straight. It was always like running into Chester, going to a session, doing something. Their band Grey Days was blowing up locally with their song B12. And then he just disappeared. Right? And we're like, what happened to Chester? Right? And it felt like, maybe 6 weeks, 2 months later, in the lobby of one of the studios, Linkin Park came on. Dun, dun, da, ga, dun, da, ga, everything you say to me, right? And we all knew that voice. Like, instantly, we're like, is that fucking Chester? And, like, he had, like, short, spiky, bleached hair, right? And we're like, that's where he's been, dude? Like, what? So none of us even knew what was going on at the time. He just, like, disappeared from the face of the earth as far as we knew. And so had always stayed cool, had always stayed crazy supportive. Then he started his side project with the guys from Orgy, who I had been down with too. We had actually just done a tour, my old band, with Amir and Ryan and okay. Their drummer, Bones. We went back to from when he's from San Antonio. My bands used to play all the time in San Antonio. And when we were like in high school and stuff, and we would, you know, run to San Antonio. So there was all these ties. So it came back together again, you know, Chester and those dudes and the Orgy dudes. And it was just surreal when I heard about his passing and like how it went down. And I caught wind of it pretty quick, just because of like, I guess our inner circle, so to speak. You know what I mean? It's like there was a handful of us that like found out, I mean, within the hour, you know, like what the heck just happened. And it was weird because for me, I felt like in a way I had seen him. And again, even though he's a few years my senior, it was like I felt like I had seen him grow up. You know what I mean? Because I saw Chester when he had, you know, him and Sean. I mean, Sean, their drummer from Grey Days, had to go talk to, like, Chester's dad to let him in the band. You know what I mean? Like, that's how, like, young we were at the time.
Wow.
And it's like I saw him go from being that dude to, like, Linkin Park's first video on TRL, to them blowing it up, to him become like a mega thing, and then all of a sudden you hear this. So I feel like his rock star life cycle, so to speak, I had seen since the beginning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for me, that was like really weird, dude. Like, I couldn't wrap my head around it. You know what I mean? I had always known that, like, I mean, he was like, you know, had some issues with some stuff, but like he'd never worn it on his sleeve. Like Eddie, he was always super nice.
Mm-hmm.
You ran into Chester. You also knew that you were running into a good conversation, lots of hugs. Bro, I miss you. Just super sweetness. What can I get you? Are you thirsty? Are you hungry? Do you need anything? Do you need tickets to the show? Blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? It was like,
right.
You just knew if you saw Chester, like, good things were going to happen, right? And so to hear how it went down, just like, I still don't believe it, to be, like, perfectly honest. You know what I mean? It's so crazy. I'm like, it's just weird, dude. And it's sad, but I'm glad that Sean and Mace are resurrecting that Grey Day stuff, man.
Cool.
Like, I really, have you heard it?
I haven't heard it. I haven't. Because I almost kind of like, and you know, you can smack me with a chair if we're saying this, but I almost kind of feel like they're trying to cash in on the whole Chester thing, or.
Right. You know what? I think they would have. You could maybe say that if it was like so much earlier in the game, but
yeah.
You know, it's been almost 3 years now. I think it's a good time for them to do it. That band really was, to be perfectly honest, I mean, they were on a trajectory, in the way it's my understanding that Chester got into Linkin Park was through an attorney, and the attorney was actually handling Grey Days because they were about to get Grey Days like a big deal. So it was his destiny one way or the other.
Right.
I do feel like Sean, and I could be wrong, but I feel like Sean's really treating it, which is the drummer, and was also Chester's partner in their tattoo shop in Phoenix, well, in Tempe. I think he's treating it really right, man. I really, really do, because I felt like if they wanted to catch in, they would have done it way sooner. I don't think they would bring in some of the names that they have brought in to work on the record. It's like very close-knit. There was not a lot of talk about it. I know the guy Rene, who's the A&R for the record, and he was lifelong friends with Chester, man. So there's not like cats that came into Chester's life, the back end of his career, and all of a sudden they're trying to cash in. Like, these are dudes to me that were like there from the beginning, you know, down to Sean again, sitting in a living room trying to convince Chester's dad, just let him sing, man. Come on. You know, I know he's, you know, still a teenager and in high school, but he's got a great voice. Like, Sean has stood the test of time. They were partners in the tattoo shop all the way to the end. Chester was the one that actually brought back the idea of the Grey Days reunion. So I don't know, man. And I just think it's special to hear. I know it's special for me to hear because I have the original version of the Grey Days record. And to hear the way they're redoing it, you're like, wow, it's like if he's alive and they redid it. But those were his vocal sessions that I actually got to hear him record. Like, I was there for those some, what, 20, 25 years ago? It was 96, 97 that he recorded those. Like, I was there, dude.
Wow.
So it's trippy. It's trippy to hear, you know what I mean? Because it's like reliving it again. So I think for a lot of us that know him, it's like he's still here one more time, you know?
You know, with the whole, like, with Chester especially, like, you know, those songs were such huge hits, those Linkin Park songs. And, you know, how many, I can't even say, like, how many times, you know, they come on the radio or you're listening to it on CD or whatever, Spotify or whatever you're doing. And you're singing along. And it's weird, like, those songs after he passed, like, I really, really, like, then as I'm singing along, like, I'm listening to the lyrics in a different way now. I'm like,
oh, yeah.
maybe it was me, but. This poor guy was hurting and crying out for help. That's the way it came across to me.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And he never wore it on his sleeve, man. That was a crazy thing. That's what I'm saying. You would have never guessed it from him. Never, like, in a million years, because you were like, wow, that's not at all the dude that, like, I remember inviting me, you know what I mean, to my first, come on, dude, just come on and, like, help on the record, man. I mean, I've even got, like, a little Wikipedia screenshot or somewhere where, like, my name was included real tiny in the thing, you know, as part of that first project and stuff. And it was like, dude, like, you set it off for me, you know what I mean? And in a lot of ways he did set it off, because it was like, that was the first time I had experienced, like, a friend blow up. And it was like, wow, this can be real, you know what I mean? Like,
really
can be real, because, like, my homie who was just in the same room with me, like, 3 weeks ago, is now, like, number one on TRL. Who knew? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So it was crazy, and it was inspiring, definitely, like that. And, in fact, I remember doing a radio interview for Mirror Mirror, and someone had actually said that, you're like, dude, it reminds me of, like, Chester's vocals. And I was like, whoa, I'm not even that cool. You know what I mean? But I can say, I was like, I think that might have been something we connected on vocally, and that he always wanted to be a singer, man. Like, he loved singing, and I love singing, you know. It's like, we're not screamers. Like, he has the scream thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's still like, we loved singing, and we loved rock, and we loved rock singers. Right. So that was the first thing that, like, we clicked on. Like, we always really wanted our voices to be, like, very as top notch as we could, you know. There was a little Axl Rose in each one of us in that regard. You know what I mean? That you're like, I don't care if I'm a mess, I still want to have chops, bro. You know what I mean? I want to be able to sing across the spectrum and do everything that I can. And so when I got that compliment, you know, I was like, you know what? Well, I can say that, you know, I channel a lot of that, you know, that same emotive. That was something that he had that I always thought was, like, super beautiful. Like, when he sung something, man, he could sing, like, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. Like, and if he was singing it, like, you're like, yeah. Twinkle, man. You know what I'm saying? And so that was something that I wanted to capture for As Strange as Angels. Like, I want you to feel that, man. Like, if you didn't feel it, then you probably, like, don't get it. So you don't really need to be, like, into it anyways. But if you do feel it, then you get it. And you understand what it is we're doing here, you know?
I get it. I totally get it.
So when are we going to have our tag team?
Well, I'm actually a little closer to you now that I'm in Nashville. I'm closer to Texas.
Yes. I'm telling you, man, come back, dude, or I'll be your manager. I always wanted to be a manager because I'm, like, good on the mic, right? So I feel like I could take the stick and, like, run with it, dude.
Yeah, I could see you doing it. I could totally see you.
I'll do all your promos. Here we go, dude. Bring it back, dude. Would you ever do another match?
You know what? It's great. Like, probably not, but if I would do it, like, I'd be probably better off doing it now because I've lost the, I've dropped to about 100 pounds since the last time I talked to you.
No way. Are you serious?
I'm the lightest I've been since before I started the wrestling business. I'm the lightest I've been.
No way. That's amazing, man.
Yeah. I'm like 230 something now. I don't even know what I am. I haven't got weighed in a few weeks because the gym's closed. But yeah, I'm down like under 240 now.
Dude, well, congrats. You've been working hard on it, right?
You know what? Going back to finally being happy in life was a big part of it. But
that's a huge difference.
Yeah, like my diet's completely different, and I eat way healthier now. And you know, I work out, I go walk, I do yoga, and yeah, like everything in my life is completely different now.
Oh yeah, I can attest to that, man. When I never believed in the effects of like being sad or depressed or anything until like I actually got out of it. Realize that I was in it. You know what I mean? I was like, bro, I don't even eat. How in the world am I gaining weight and losing hair? And the hair I do have is, God knows what's happening with it right now. You know what I mean? It was like, how does this happen? And you don't realize until you get out of it that you're like, even just having a reason to wake up in the morning gets your body going, gets your brain going, gets your heart going, gets everything going to things not bothering you if you're like, oh, you're tasked with, I don't know, having to walk to the store for whatever reason, your car won't start, and you're like, well, I got to go get groceries and carry them. When you're happy, you could care less because you're like, you know what? I'm happy that I have to do this for this person or for this reason or for whatever, right? It's like so weird, and you don't realize it when you're in it, and I think that's the hard part about trying to get out of it, and that's part of my message again with the new single, Never Broken, man. It's like, you got to get out of it. Because it's not someone else's fault forever. It is eventually on you. You know what I mean? Like, and you got to snap out of it, and you got to break that cycle for yourself so that you can realize you still have so much of your life to live and you aren't held captive in that regard, you know?
It's so true. Yeah, I mean, you said it's such a mouthful there. It's amazing. And that's what I did. Like, I kind of sat in a depression for many years and, you know, was blaming myself too for not getting out of it and just sinking deeper and deeper and eating and eating and eating. And yeah, and you're so right. You have to break out of it. If you don't break out of it, you know, you
do, man.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, dude, I gained, I think like 20 pounds. Like I'm like 198 now and I gained like 20 or 30 pounds. And I had an infection at the time in my digestive tract called CDIF. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No.
Well, basically, you either get it two ways. There has been some sort of, this kind of gross fecal matter in your system, maybe through someone mishandling food, or you've had so much antibodies, which I was sick all the time and always on antibiotic, that it breaks down the lining in your digestive tract.
Ooh.
So, yeah, so that you get like a hole. And there's a one or two ways. I mean, you can probably get it more ways, but those were the one of two ways. And it was very likely because I was on a different antibiotic like every 6 weeks because I was stressed out and scared and nervous and just living in fear, like hanging on a thread. That's pretty sure that's how I got it. Although the day I found out, I also had a chorizo sandwich from Starbucks, which I'm glad they discontinued because that was the most disgusting thing I've ever had in my life, but that's a side note. they should be sued for creating that thing. But and I'm Mexican, so I know chorizo. So I'm like, bro, that is not the way to go. But anyway, it ate out that lining in my digestive tract, so I couldn't even eat. All I could have was like soup, and it was just a matter of time before like I was just renting that sucker, not buying it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that was one of the times when I finally noticed. I was like, dude, I can't even eat anything solid. All I can eat is liquid. How in the world is my body doing what it's doing to me? You know what I mean? It's just crazy, man. So like, you gotta really get out of that funk. And I'm so happy that you did, man. And I try to share my own experiences only because I want to let people know there's always a light at the end of the tunnel, man. You can't stop in the middle of the tunnel and give up, you know? You know,
it's true.
Keep going, dude. Just keep going, dude. I heard a quote one day that really resonated with me. It said, "All storms run out of rain." And that stuff sounds cliche, but then you're like, when you think about a lot of things, you're like, everything does eventually end.
Yeah.
Good and bad, which sucks. But mm-hmm. I mean, like, you're eventually over it. You know what I mean? So sometimes when you're in it, instead of worrying about the fact that you're in it, also realize, I'm also halfway through it now, man. The only other direction for me now is to be done with it.
Yeah.
So, fuck it. Let's just get done with it, you know?
It's absolutely true. Wow.
Maybe I need to hook up with DDP and his positive thinking.
There you go.
Awesome, man.
Oh, man.
Well, good talking to you, brother, man.
You too, man.
How you doing?
So we're, you know, we got to wait a month for people to hear this song. Where do we send everybody? Do you come back in a month and talk again? What do we do?
Yeah, well, see, what I'm thinking that we do is we get you back in the ring, bro, and that's when we throw the single, dude, and it'll be your entrance music. Yeah, you can catch a Never Broken May 15th. It drops. We're going to be doing some pretty interesting stuff in the light of the current situation in the world to try and to bring the music to people that are interested in hearing it. So we've made the pivot with technology. I'm super excited to be announcing that. And the way Michelle and I, my drummer and I, are going to do that. But May 15th, Never Broken. You can get it anywhere. You get your music, Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, SoundCloud, stealing it, your best friend, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your whatever it is that you're doing in your life, man. Just get it. Check it out. Because more so than being on a business level, like I've said before, it's a message. And in ways that I can't help the world, this is at least one way. You know, I'm not saying I'm extremely talented, but I've been lucky enough, you know, thanks to God, to have a gift of playing music that maybe whatever it is that I can share lyrically might help someone listening on the other end through your day, and especially in these crazy times. So that's what Never Broken is about. It's about overcoming adversity. Don't let life break you. Check it out May 15th. And if you follow us on our social media, at As Strange As Angels on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you will be able to start getting some of the updates. Check it out. We're going to be doing some interesting stuff, I think, leading up to the release. You know, might as well make it fun, man. Again, rather than being upset about the moment that you're in, let's create something around the moment and make it more fun. So we're going to do some cool stuff, man. And I appreciate you always, brother.
Absolutely.
Brother, man. I really, really do. I'm still a mark. I pop every time I watch stuff on the WWE Network. Have you realized you're on there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had to, last year I subscribed to it for a few months to show my daughter some old ECW stuff and all. It's funny, like, we sat there and we watched it, and, like, I was thinking to myself, holy crap, we were freaking nuts. And we watched it, and my daughter turned to me, and she said to me, literally, and I quote, "You guys were fucking nuts."
There you go, man. Yeah, it's crazy. I pop every time I see it. I'll watch, like, old ECW stuff, because I've gotten into this thing now where I'm like, you know what? I'll just start from the beginning of, like, all of this old territory stuff, literally, like, in order, as much as I can remember it, like, in my own timeline since I was so young watching it. But I'm like, do I start with the CWF, or was it Memphis you know what I mean? Georgia,
yeah.
Championship. Like, I try to put the timelines because I like to see it, like, re-evolve in a way again, like, relive it, right? You're like how, you know, you see Shawn Michaels with short hair, and then all of a sudden he's, you know, the Heartbreak Kid with his long, cool hair. But I'm like, dude, he was such a dork when he first came out in AWA. You know what I mean? but we thought it was cool.
Here's a little thing for you, too. The very first match in ECW TV history is me and my old partner in my original biker gimmick. And I forget who it was against. I think it was against the Super Destroyers, the tag team chance at the time. So, yeah, you can see me before being a Dudley, being one of the Hell Riders.
Yeah, that's right, dear. See, I got to hit all of that. I'm telling you, man, I pop. I literally pop probably like 12:30 at night one night. I was like, oh, dude, Bog and Spay, what? It's crazy. And I love those things, man. I love, not because, like, it's like any sort of, like, fame and, like, idolizing fame, right? It's just, like, I get so pumped when I see people that I know doing their thing, because it reminds me that, like, you always have to keep your dream alive.
Yeah.
And literally anything is possible. You know what I mean? And how we all measure success, to me, is, like, that's how that's your platinum record. You know what I mean? Whatever it is, if your goal was to just, man, I make one ECW match and I'm on, you know, immortalized on this network for as long as it's around, then that's your success. That's your platinum, right?
Maybe.
So I get so excited when I see that, because sometimes you do, you feel boxed in. You feel like you want to quit. You feel like, what's the point? Right? You know what I mean? You just feel like, dude, like this is, I'm already a glass ceiling in life. Right? And so when you see things like that, it's just a reminder of like, well, if we did it back then, why can't we still do it now? Like, what's changed? You know what
right.
I mean? We just got to get out there and do it. So it's cool, man. Like, you inspire me just seeing that, because I'm like, that's my buddy, dude. What? I know him. I know him. That's cool, man. So if you ever come across any old Chubby Dudley stuff, dude, memorabilia, you got to hook your boy up. I'll take it.
Right. You never know.
All right. Awesome, man. Well, you be good, brother. And
you too, man. Great hearing from you, Robin.
I'm so glad to hear you're doing great.
Thanks, man. You too. And loving a new song. And
Oh, thank you, brother. Awesome, man. You got it. Thanks, babe.
Yep. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.